There are lots of words about women that have been taboo and derogatory for centuries, and people have tried to reclaim them with varying degrees of success. But the word witch still casts a dark shadow, I think. Sometimes we have even politicians using it to refer to women who've worked their way into leadership positions. Writer Sam George Allen has a much more positive view of the power of the witch. She's written a book about female collaboration called Witches, What Women Do Together. It features both Covens and the Country Women's Association. That is very impressive. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Sam, you had a massive revelation that led to you writing this book about the tension you felt within yourself between calling yourself a feminist and your actual attitudes to women. Can you tell us how that played out for you?
Yeah, so it was sort of the germ of writing this book. I had a strong emotional response to another woman's success, and the emotional response was overwhelming envy. And I realized that I had been comparing myself and competing with other women for a really long time, and that obviously didn't sit well with my feminist theory. And I guess I wanted to write the book as a way of putting that theory into practice, as a way of addressing the sort of compulsory rivalry that I felt I needed to have with other women.
So you turned to history and you looked at witches and the idea of women working together in covens. How much evidence did you find that women actually did work together? Was it just the fevered imaginings of a panicked patriarchy?
Yeah, look, I mean, when you look at the witch craze of the Middle Ages, and what you see is not actual witchcraft. You see thousands of women being scapegoated as, you know, proxies onto which local populations and particularly the church projected all their anxieties. And you see women being blamed for things like crop failure and children dying and all that kind of stuff that just comes with being a Middle Ages peasant. But you do still see traditions of women working together, whether they're magical or not. I guess it depends on your definition of magical as well.
And they were also viewed with deep suspicion. Why do you think there was this suspicion of female agency and power?
I mean, it has a lot to do with patriarchal structures of power. Certain historians suggest that there was a concerted effort by the church and particularly the burgeoning medical establishment in the Middle Ages to discredit women's knowledge and women who, collaborated because it posed a direct competitor to the Catholic Church's medical institutions. But I think the suspicion of women working together is something that hasn't really gone away as well. You can see it in the sort of disparaging attitudes towards women in groups, the use of the word gossip, and that kind of combination of suspicion and dismissal that happens a lot, I think.
Though you could say today, too, that there's a fair bit of suspicion about men-only activities. I was thinking of the furor about Julian Burnside revealing he was a member of a gentleman's club.
Sure, yeah. The gentleman's club is a fairly fraught cultural space.
Yes, indeed. Well, Sam, how well do women work together? Is the bitchiness and cliquiness trope a complete myth?
I think it is wildly exaggerated, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to suggest that there is no clickiness and bitchiness in any group. You know, people can be dreadful to each other. But I think that overall and in general, women make fantastic collaborators with one another. It's something about being in a women-only space really takes off a pressure that you often don't realize is on you when you're in male-dominated spaces. And once that pressure is off, once that weight is lifted, you have all this emotional and, I guess, psychological room to explore collaboration and explore creativity particularly.
I love how you write too, though, about some of the women who make it to the top and then, as you say, kick the door shut on the women behind them. What's going on there?
I mean, I am sympathetic to those women. You consider that a lot of women particularly of, say, my parents' generation, worked really, really hard fighting against sexism and marginalization and obstacles in every form to get to a position at the top. So, say, the only woman on a the only woman member of a board, or maybe a woman CEO or something like that. And because they fought so hard and because there's only one of them, I think it's easy to believe that there's only room for one woman. And so they can guard quite jealously those positions that they fought so hard for. But I do think that's an attitude that's starting to change.
I was a little perturbed by your suggestion that groups of women can be subversive, like the CWA or the Girl Scouts. That's not my memory of all the badge polishing and patch sewing. How are they subversive?
I mean, I think they're subversive in an emblematic way. The kind of dynamics that happen within those groups, yeah, I think you're probably right. They can be interesting. But the fact that they exist as places where women make their decisions and occupy all the positions on a hierarchy or in a team, I think is still subversive in a culture that suggests that men should hold leadership positions.
Fascinating discussion in the book too, the book Witches by Sam George Allen, who we're speaking with today on Life Matters, that teenage girls lead the charge for cultural change. That's a really confronting idea for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's by no means my original idea. Plenty of other people have discussed it, but you see it in all kinds of parts of culture. I mean, I talk particularly about music. You think about, obviously, the just phenomenon of Beatlemania and the fact that most of the Beatles' early fans were women, well, teenage girls. But also you can see it in linguistic change. Teenage girls are always the first adopters or the inventors of new ways of speaking. And while they're usually disparaged while teenage girls are doing it, that those kinds of linguistic tropes rapidly make it into the mainstream, and then it's totally fine, everyone does it.
You also talk about the beauty club, and I reacted viscerally to this from my teenage years. I felt like the beauty club was really exclusionary and that conversations around makeup were often really shallow. But you came to some different conclusions here, Sam.
Yeah, so I got into digital makeup communities through YouTube beauty tutorials, which is just a huge subset of the whole YouTube platform. Yeah, I mean, I got into it because I didn't really know how to do my makeup properly, and I went to the internet like most people do. But I found such a warm and welcoming community that really took completely did away with the competitive aspect of beauty. There was sort of nothing about, or you need to be prettier than someone else, or you need to be pretty in order to snag a man or anything like that. It was this place where you could take this tool, which is definitely, you know, an aspect of the patriarchy that suggests that women's only value lies in how they look, but you can take that aspect of the patriarchy and you can turn it into a tool of expression and a way to flex your skills and a way to connect with other people who have the same passion as you.
And it's obviously body adornment and skin adornment is something people have done for millennia.
So oh, yeah.
I really want to talk before we run out of time about nuns, because as you write, there's such an interesting paradox. Can nuns on ancient or modern lines be any kind of role model today?
I mean, I think so. The woman who I interviewed for that chapter, Sister Marianne, I just can't overstate how important she was to the whole book writing process and just to me as a person. I was so taken aback by what she was like in person. She was a philosopher and probably the only person who I would consider a modern day philosopher who I've got to spend time with. I absolutely think she's a role model. You know, she gets to spend her time she's on the St. Vincent's hospital board, so she spends a lot of time in healthcare and taking care of people, but she also spends time, you know, grappling with big theological questions in a way that I don't think is presented as an option for a lot of women. I think nuns really can be spiritual leaders, even for those of us who are completely secular.
And you write really amusingly about the older style nuns who, you know, if you're really lucky and rich, you could sit there composing beautiful music and have a lovely quiet life and not be forced to marry anyone. But I was wondering, you know, if anyone's had an experience of the system of child removal from unwed mothers, or your account of Auntie Dawn's experience where she was removed from her family as a child, like a lot of other Aboriginal children, and worked in a convent as effectively slave labour. They would have really different ideas about how pro-women nuns were.
Yeah. I mean, I think like all systems, the religious, women religious, and particularly within the Catholic Church, it's very complicated. Particularly the Catholic Church, I think we need to recognise that it does have a history and a tradition of subjugating women and using the women within it, within that system, to subjugate others. None of this stuff is black and white. I think there's so much room for nuance in discussing, nuns and everyone.
We like nuance here on Life Matters. That's all good. I'm approaching crone status, Sam George Allen. Is it time to reclaim that word at all?
I think so. I mean, you know, obviously, hopefully it's in my future as well. I think there's so much room in culture for us to make space for older women to have, to be given the respect and the kind of reverence that they deserve. I talked to my mother about feeling invisible sort of post-menopause, which seems like a really common experience, that once you've passed a certain age as a woman, people just don't see you anymore.
That can have its pros and cons, trust me.
I'm sure it can. But I think, you know, it's doing a disservice to people who have so much wisdom and so much experience. And I think older women, people who've reached the crone age are left out of discussions where they could be so valuable, their perspectives and their experiences.
Well, and we came together very strongly at the end where you talked about Helen Garner and how much of a role model she can be for women heading towards the older years. Sam Green-Allen, I found it a fascinating exploration of our thoughts about women. Sam George Allen, sorry. Thanks so much for coming on Life Matters today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sam is a writer and musician, and the book's called Witches, What Women Do Together. You're listening to RN.